to First Things First. Good morning, I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We got a big show today, lots to talk about. Alexi Lalas is going to join us live from Russia. Talk about the big game yesterday. That was an incredible game. Sarah Kustak is here. She's going to talk Carmelo and Boogie and other one-name superstars. And Eli Manning will open up on Odell Beckham Jr. because we are inching closer to football, and it is very exciting.
Sounds fantastic. Let's do it.
We've got a good three-hour show, so strap in. Here we go. We're going to lead, though, with the Lakers. A year ago at this time, I'll tell you what we didn't lead our show with. We didn't lead our show with the point guard battle on the Los Angeles Lakers. Also, we didn't have a show a year ago, so we definitely did not lead with that.
But we wouldn't have otherwise.
Probably not. Point guard battle this year is worthy of some chatter. Lonzo Ball enters year two. Rajon Rondo just got signed to a one-year deal. Oh, and LeBron James now plays on the team. Lonzo versus Rondo. Here's Lakers head coach Luke Walton.
Well, I think it's going to be great for Lonzo. You know, Lonzo to me is a player that he even shines more with the more talent that's around him because he's unselfish, he's a winner, and he wants to get, you know, other people involved all the time. So, you know, when you get shooters and all-stars around him, I think that just brings out what he does best, and he's going to continue to develop his personal game as well. So obviously, between the injuries, and how much we struggled last season when he was out, we felt like it was important for us to get another point guard that we could rely on when, you know, if he were to continue, you know, dealing with those type of injuries. And we feel very confident that Rondo is that guy. We also think Rondo can really help teach Lonzo the NBA game and the nuances of the point guard position because they both play the game in an unselfish manner. So they're going to be a good mix for each other.
All right, CeCe, assuming Lonzo is healthy to start the season, based on what you saw from him in year one, what are realistic expectations now for Lonzo Ball this coming season?
I think the only way you can really have realistic expectations is maybe go back and look at some other NBA players, maybe players that you like now, maybe players now that are all NBA players, and you're like, well, I wonder where they were when they were rookies. I remember all the lack of belief in Steph Curry. When he was at Golden State, him and Mark Jackson, that organization at one point, they didn't have the faith in Steph Curry that they had now. Remember Kawhi Leonard as a player in San Antonio, great system, young player on a great team, but it's about development. James Harden, he was a backup at OKC. So sometimes I think that we forget what this NBA is about. First of all, it's about the best basketball in the world. These are the best athletes in the world. So even the star players that come from college, we should have a baked in into the equation. They're going to struggle somewhat. This is not what guys do, jump from college to the pro and just dominate. So I expect him to keep developing. I expect us to see a different guy as far as his body, his overall body. I expect him to be a little heavier. His understanding of the game, I think, will only increase. I think his shot will get better. He will be playing with better players. So not only Rondo, LeBron, but the guys he played with last year having another year of chemistry. And also, I think sometimes failure, especially when you're young, is the best teacher. And that's what we saw as guys coming into the NBA, and that's what we saw with Lonzo. He couldn't dominate games. He couldn't log long minutes. He had problems with his knee and other things. So understanding what the NBA life is about, but my expectation is to continue, just like those other players, I want to see him grow. I want to see his shooting percentage get higher. I want to see him average around 15, 16 points a game. I like how unselfish he is with the ball, but let's see how the locker rooms change. Let's see how much maturity and leadership that he can show around guys that have been NBA champions, guys that have been superstars for a long time in this league.
I'm really glad you mentioned Steph and Kawhi and Harden because those three guys specifically, even as they, if they struggled or dealt with injury or weren't immediately super high impact guys, we saw with each of those guys instantly one skill they had that was elite, top of the league level. For Steph, it was shooting. For Kawhi, it was defense. For James Harden, it was isolation scoring. For all those guys had at least one thing that basically the moment they got to the NBA, they did at an all-star level. For Lonzo, that's passing and rebounding as a guard. He is actually a better rebounder as a guard comparatively than he is passer. But I think he has elite passing ability.
Nick, go back to your first time you saw him, because I was with you, and we had heard about Lonzo through high school, knew about the family and everything. But going to Pauley Pavilion in Los Angeles to see him play for UCLA, I took away from that, man, you were wildly impressed from the first time.
Because he played an older game than at the time. I think he was 18. It was very early in his freshman year at UCLA. He may have just turned 19. But he played a more mature game than you see from almost anyone in college, much less an early season freshman. He was not worried about keeping the ball in his hands. He was always worried about skipping the ball ahead, keeping the ball moving. And we saw that as a rookie. I would caution people on this when it comes to his counting stats. You mentioned 15, 16 points a game. Last year, the Lakers played the fastest pace in basketball. LeBron's never been on a team that was one of the 10 fastest paces.
Right.
So they will slow down somewhat. So they'll have fewer scoring opportunities. So some of his counting stats might not improve to the level that we thought that we would anticipate. But he was compared coming out of school to Jason Kidd. His rookie year, he had an almost identical rookie year to what Jason Kidd did. I mean, you can look at it right there. Kidd, point and a half more. Lonzo, a better rebounder. Almost a wash on assists. Field goal percentage, Kidd a little bit better. Three-point percentage, Lonzo a little bit better, but very similar. Kidd's second year in the league, he gave you 17, 7, and 10. Now, Jason Kidd's one of the 10 best point guards ever, a Hall of Famer. I'm not assigning that to him. But could Lonzo be a 13, 9, and 9 guy? That would be 15, 16 if they played at the pace they did last year? Sure. Is he a guy where the field goal percentage is going to go from 36 to 41 and the three-point percentage from 30 to 33? If those things happen, he is on the trajectory that we thought he would be on when he was taken number two in the draft.
What does he have to do to get better this year? We talked all last season about his shot, that you both had an issue with the way he was shooting, and that if he really wanted to improve, he was going to have to do that in the offseason and change it. It doesn't look like he's really changed his shot at all, but what is the thing that he needs to do to make his mark as a true, really talented guard, shooting guard?
Well, the Lakers, that's a very good question, because his shooting will be part of the conversation. The Lakers believe that he doesn't have to change his shot. So even if you don't have to change the fundamentals of your shot, the amount of time that you have to shoot the ball and the amount of shots. A lot of NBA players, they have some strange injuries, but you see a lot of them, they'll see the key tape that they use on their shoulder. A lot of guys have shoulder problems because this will be the most basketball they've ever shot the basketball. So the routine of shooting the basketball, I believe he has a shooting routine or a regiment that he's getting into now. Right. When you play with better players, it's about taking better shots also. So I believe his shot selection, it will improve. And also, the gravity of having LeBron on the court in a lot of those minutes.
Yeah.
So he's going to get some open shots. It's just a matter of him now getting to his spot. I believe he's a better shooter, and I believe the percentages will go up.
And listen, he was this 57th percentile isn't great, but it's better than his other percentiles. That's where he was on catch and shoot threes, okay? He's going to get more of those because of LeBron. He's going to have fewer off-the-bounce threes. But the thing that I think he needs to improve on more than anything is health. He missed 30 games last year. 30 games is a rookie. So, like, I think the other things we logically can believe will continue to improve. The health is the, to me, the biggest concern with Lonzo is the health, is the knee, is the issue, the lingering injury issues in a Western Conference that has a bunch of really tough point guards.
And the other part of this that we'll talk about is where this point guard situation and this combo matches up with others in the West. We will get to that when we talk about this again. But coming up on the other side is Carmelo Anthony. More about winning or filling the stat sheets. We'll break that down next on First Things First. This is the First Things First podcast, the episode brought to you by 4hims.com. It's time to discuss an issue that you may not want to hear. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. But good news, it's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace what you lost. How will you feel a year from now if there are bald spots creeping up? Well, here are your options. Do you want a bald spot to pop up or your hairline to recede, or do you want to do something about it first? This is where 4hims.com comes in. It is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and an overall helpful product for men. That's right. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. There are no waiting rooms or weird doctor visits down a back alley. Just go to 4hims.com and take action today. It is so easy. Products will be brought right to your door. Here's how to do it. Order now. Listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to 4hims.com/first. That's 4hims, F-O-R-H-I-M-S.com/first. 4hims.com/first. Moving on to Carmelo Anthony. The Thunder looking to try and trade the 10-time All-Star after just 1 year in OKC. The team reportedly allowed Melo to meet with both Houston and Miami ahead of his near and imminent departure from the team. Melo coming off a season in which he averaged a career-low 16.2 points a game. Nick, what will Melo's choice wherever he ends up? Tell us about what his priorities are. What's most important to him as he makes this decision?
Listen, if Carmelo Anthony picks the Miami Heat, then everything Chris has been saying about Melo is totally true. If Melo picks the Miami Heat, he will be deciding it is more important for me to play on my terms than to evolve at this late stage of my career and give myself the best chance to do the only thing I haven't done in basketball. Not in the NBA, the only thing in basketball. This guy won championship at Oak Hill. He won a championship one and done at Syracuse, Olympic gold medalist, first ballot Hall of Famer. He's been a scoring champion. He's been all NBA, 10-time all. What? The only thing he hasn't done is play in an NBA Finals and potentially win an NBA Finals. If he chooses the Miami Heat, he's saying playing the way I want to play is what's most important to me. If he chooses the Rockets, or you could argue the Lakers, even though I think they are probably the least likely of those three teams, then it would say to me, Carmelo is reprioritizing and Carmelo is open to making major adjustments that he didn't want to make not only last year, but the last time he played for Mike D'Antoni in New York when that went terribly sour. So I think this will, now maybe it'll turn out he picks he tries to have his cake and eat it too. I'm going to pick the good team and try to not change anything. That would surprise me. So I think whichever team he chooses will give us a window in to what his priorities are.
Well, Jenna, you're not going to be surprised about this because even if he selects the other two teams, I'm going to be right. Yeah, I'm not going to be wrong if he decides to go to the best team in Houston. I'm not going to be wrong if he decides to go play with LeBron because I got 15 years of video that speaks to what Melo is about. Melo is about getting buckets. You can't change your reputation at the end of your career on one decision. I think kind of the irony to it, and people aren't talking about this, for the minimum, I mean, he's getting totally brought out of his contract in OKC, but there's only three teams that they're talking about. Those are the three teams his buddies are on. In Miami with Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade's probably saying, that's my buddy and everything. In Houston with Chris Paul. In the third team, Los Angeles with LeBron. Don't people think that that's just kind of strange for a guy that scored as many points like that, that there's only three teams out there and those are the teams where his buddies are on those teams?
Well, I think people would think it's more strange if two of those teams weren't two teams that we thought were potential championship contenders. He's not joining the Warriors. We know that, right? So the next best contender is the Rockets, where his buddy is. Then there's the team with LeBron, which we think is probably going to get Kawhi, but is always at least a pseudo-contender as long as LeBron's there. I'd feel similarly if his buddies were with the Clippers, the Magic, and the Heat, and those were the only teams looking at him. Like,
I think there should be, with Melo, when we look at the other veteran players that are hired guns, guys coming in just to be spot-up shooters, they have more options than this. So for me, I'm a little surprised that the rest of the NBA, well, I shouldn't be surprised, because I believe Melo is limited as a player. And to think someone can play away for 15 years and then just all of a sudden just walk in the door and change, there's a reason why him and D'Antonio struggled in New York. Now, they might say, oh, those were different circumstances. Let me tell you something. When a guy is trying to tell you what to do and you decide I'm not going to do that. So I don't love the fact that Houston just decided to try to play some defense. They lose two defensive players, wing players, and now they're going to bring in Melo and think Melo's going to play defense. I think that people are They're really not speaking the truth as far as who Melo is. I got 15 years of video that would say that he's going to react a certain way.
Right, and so the reason I said that if he goes to Miami, I didn't say if he goes somewhere else, you will definitively be wrong. I said if he goes to Miami, you will definitively be right. The point that I'm making is...
I'm already right.
Even if
Melo wins the championship.
Wait a second, see.
As a supporting
player.
There
is no way to know... No one can be right or wrong about something that has not yet happened. The point is, the question is, will he adjust? Will he change who he is as a basketball player in year 16? If he goes to Miami, that will say to me, he don't want to change nothing. If he goes to Houston, I would think it says he's open to changing. Now, it doesn't mean he will have. We will have to wait and see how the games are played. What I think was tough for Melo, and what I think people have forgotten because of how the year in OKC went, was his last year in New York, this guy was 97th percentile catch and shoot threes. This guy was the second best mid-range isolation scorer in basketball. So he went to OKC thinking, why would I change anything? I'm still a 20-point-a-game guy. I'm still elite at the things I've always done. He's no longer that guy. That's why I think that there is more of an opportunity for him to change than there was last year.
I feel like we just had this conversation about Dwight Howard. Here's a guy who's been one way his whole career. I know you're talking basketball skill and personality or presence, but now all of a sudden in year 15, you feel like you're going to change your colors as to who you were. But where do you think Melo should go then to play?
I think he should go to Houston. Especially with them not having the wing players, the spot, catching ability to be able to shoot, every once in a while being able to isolate because, you know, the coach doesn't like isolation, but Harden does isolate, and they do utilize it. So I believe his talent is better served there, and they really have championship aspirations. But back to what you're saying as far as Dwight, he's a version of a Dwight Howard. It's like, Jenna, some person, they've been eating any type of food that they want to for 20 years. Then now all of a sudden they get into their 40s, and you know something? I'm going to start being conscious of my body. Well, let me tell you something. You have lost the advantage that people like Jenna and myself realized long time ago, that if you decide to, I'm going to watch what I eat while I'm younger, then you might be able to salvage your body. You can't get back all those years. Read articles about Carmelo Anthony. He was in Men's Health magazine in the middle of his career talking about, hey, what do you eat? He talked about McDonald's and things like that. All of a sudden, you can't just think that, oh, I'm going to try to eat right, and now I'm going to get back that athleticism. Once it's gone, it is gone.
I love the example you just used, that people, if they live a certain way, if they're smokers or they eat unhealthy, they tend to continue on that trajectory. Sometimes, though, if someone changes, you know why they do? Because they have a heart attack. Because they have a major life event that makes them say,
so getting waved,
I have to change.
He didn't have one.
That's where we disagree. This is the most embarrassing moment of Carmelo Anthony's basketball career. Without question. Someone paying you to go away is...
It might be embarrassing to you, but there is no evidence that it's embarrassing to him. We're thinking. I tell you a great story. When I got cut from Buddy Ryan, that was the worst days of my life. I changed. And the reason why I know, because when I went to Minnesota, I started doing different things. So it wasn't just the moment. It was something in my brain told me, I'm not going to just give that to Melo. He don't deserve that. He needs to do it, and then I'll give him credit. Show me some signs where Melo is doing this. You get paid. You get bought out. $27 million, go home. That ain't no bad day.
I didn't say it was a bad day, but it can be an embarrassing day. And you might be right that I shouldn't sit here, and I don't think I have, and definitively say I know he will do this. But I don't think it's fair to say definitively you know he will not. Like, we don't know how...
Last year, he had a chance to change in OKC. Now, you might say, oh, man, as a scorer, his numbers, as a post-up, all those things, isolation. But when he went to OKC, they did ask him a question. And he couldn't do different things. He is not a good role player. So he just had the opportunity in OKC. And there's a reason outside of the tax implication. There's a reason why they purchased his contract. There's a reason why he's waiving his no trade clause now. There's a reason why. Because OKC didn't want to play basketball with him anymore. So now he's at the crossroads as far as what I'm going to do. The only three teams right now that have a great deal of interest are teams that he's got three buddies on.
What's the bottom line? Nick is never going to stop eating at McDonald's.
What?
Coming up, Do the Rockets have to give? That was my takeaway.
Stop smoking for that matter.
Okay, well, we don't have to tell the audience that you smoke. That's not.
What?
No,
I'm transparent.
The Rockets have to give Clint Capela a max deal, do they? What's next on First Things First? Stevenson seemed like an unlikely teammate for LeBron before both signed with the Lakers. The two have had on-court friction over the years. Lance said, quote, it's actually funny that they're teaming up. CC, will Lance be a good teammate for LeBron?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I'm going to tell you what's going to happen in the first practice. If it's me, I'm getting ready to torture him. I'm getting ready to butcher him in practice.
Wait, ain't no Lance or LeBron?
He's talking about LeBron torturing. LeBron torturing Lance.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lance tries.
There's no referees to be able to protect him. Just his introduction. It's good to see you, buddy. I like guys that can be competitive, but not be combative. Mm-hmm. And LeBron is bigger than the situation. Realize, me and this guy did battle. I want him on my side.
And listen, I don't think Lance is a particularly... I don't think he's a far above average basketball player. I think he's a little better than replacement level. They might have overpaid for him a little bit. But he's not a guy LeBron ever expressed any type of personal distaste for. We assigned that to him because Lance knew he's bigger than me, he's stronger than me, he's faster than me, he's better than me. The only way I'm going to give myself a chance is to try to get in his head. And he went every way he possibly could. Now LeBron's not got to worry about that. I think it's a fine pairing.
Adam Silver says the NBA is likely moving towards eliminating the one-and-done rule. However, the change would likely not happen before the 2021 season. Nick, where do you stand on this? Good move by the NBA?
I think it was an inevitable move. I think the one-and-done rule, whether you like it or not, I think it's wildly unfair. I think you can't use the football example where guys, there's one in 10,000 that are physically ready out of high school.
Less than that.
Okay, sure. I mean, one in 10,000 guys that make the NFL that were like that.
Yes.
I mean, it is like Adrian Peterson and maybe not even him. Okay.
No.
So the point is, there are obviously high school guys that are ready to go and have no interest in college. Now, some guys will think they're ready and it'll be terrible for them that they didn't go to college. But such is life when you're an adult. Like, sometimes you make decisions don't work out for you. This is a rule that has to be changed for fairness purposes and for practicality.
I wouldn't mind if the NBA went back to even a later stage. I don't think that we're doing the players a disservice if we moved it back. In the NFL, it's 3 years removed from high school. Right now, they're getting removed to one and done. So it's probably going to be 19 to 20. We're getting closer to 21. Like, I think it should be closer to 21 than the one and done. I think it really help out the young people mature, because a couple years of college is not going to hurt your future. Also, I believe it would help college basketball. The one and done has really hurt college basketball.
All right, finally, the NFL supplemental draft is today. Three players who could get picked: Western Michigan cornerback Sam Neill, Virginia Tech cornerback Adonis Alexander, and Mississippi State safety Brandon Bryant. Our own Chris Carter was a supplemental draft pick back in 87. Good year. CC, why is today so important for these players?
Well, it's important because they're going to get a head start on typically would have been them not being involved in the draft till 2019 in April. So they're going to get immediately, just like myself, they're going to get a chance to join the NFL roster, go in NFL locker room. So I believe that 1 year, and even though I was at a huge disadvantage because the supplemental draft didn't happen until September, so I had to join the team after missing training camp and a whole offseason of turmoil, but that 1 year, it led to me being a starter that following year. So being able to play in a number of games my rookie year, even though I missed all that camp, huge advantage over, typically, them still not being in the draft. The kids coming out in next year's draft, I know, besides the high draft picks, you would much rather get that NFL clock started and that NFL contract started, so now you're 1 year closer to being a free agent.
Even though it's moved up from where it was when you were drafted, I remember when I was covering the Houston Texans, they took a player, I think it was Xavier Suafilo, but whomever it was, his school was on the quarter system. And this was when you still, if you were on the quarter system as a college player, you were not there with the rest of the rookies. And they talked all offseason about how he was catching up. How that just missing the very beginning of the offseason, he was catching up. For the player or two, Beal or Alexander, maybe both of them, who are drafted, how far behind are they, not compared to what you had to go through, but compared to the other rookies drafted in the regular draft for whichever teams take them?
Well, they're light years behind. as far as the communication, what is the language, and the comfortability of being in a, from a college town to in a NFL city, which most of them are in. So that right there is hard to overcome that. Where do they stay? All these things, the other players, they've worked those things out. Where training camp will be, some of the things that they struggled with from what they knew in college to what they need to know in the pros. So most teams have given them a recipe for this is what we need you to know moving forward. So that is something that's hard for them to overcome. But with them being the high picks being defensive backs, and there being such a need for defensive backs, I think that teams will reach for them because you need slot corners and you need as many cornerbacks as possible.
One quick follow-up. For you, I'd imagine each rookie class, for the guys that make the team, have a bit of a formative bonding experience over the course from the draft, the rookie camp, all those things. When you got there, from a personal standpoint, did you almost feel like a man without a country? Like everyone, the cliques had already formed to a degree? Like how is that a real thing?
I was very, very fortunate because being a wide receiver, the quarterback at the time was Randall Cunningham. So he was the star. He immediately adopted me in. Jerome Brown, him and I were on all the All-American teams in college. He was the first-round pick of the Eagles. He immediately picked me up, moved me into his place. The next year, we got Keith Jackson. All three of us lived together. We were all three All-Americans.
So you had an infrastructure kind of built in.
Keith Byers, my college teammate, he was the star running back there. Reggie White, the minister of defense, he immediately began to mentor me. So my situation was very, very special.
Okay.
Popularest guy on the team.
I just drop a few names on you.
I saw that.
We're on the All-American team together. He was my
lunch with the Pope on Thursday.
It's full reveal. Black and Milds.
You're right.
I read my comments and get nervous.
Right.
All of us had a road getting here.
That's a good point.
Moving on to the Rockets offseason. Not much downtime for the folks in the front office. Restricted free agent Clint Capela reportedly turned down a 5-year, $85 million deal. According to reports, he was looking for something in the 4-year, $100 million range. So, Nick, do the Rockets need to do whatever it takes to keep Capela?
That's an intriguing question because they are absolutely keeping Clint Capela. I do not think they have to do whatever it takes because, unless depending on what you define whatever it takes by, because right now he's a guy. The way free agency sorted out, he doesn't have a lot of great options. And now he could take the qualifying offer, but, man, that would be – I'm a gambler, and that's a gamble that would terrify me.
Why?
Qualifying offer is 1 year, $4.7 million.
Sign me up. I'm taking it.
Really?
Absolutely.
Why?
How much money does Steven Adams make in
– $20 million a year.
$20 million. Well, how much does Tristan Thompson make?
$18 million a year.
Is Capela not very, very compatible to those type players?
But keep in mind, they just offered him $17 million.
I just asked, is he comparable to those type players?
He's better than Tristan, and I think he's certainly better defensively than Steven Adams.
There we go. That right there would speak for itself. Like, you're already paying centers this amount. And also the length of that contract. Man, you signed a 5-year deal. Man, you might not sign another contract. So for me, I'd much rather take the risk. When I was at this point in my career, I signed a 1-year deal. I'm going to bet on myself because that's the gamble that I'm willing to take. I don't want to, especially a deal that I'm not happy with, I'm definitely not going to sign for 5 years.
Let me just real quick, though. I think that's a lot of people's reaction, but you gotta tease the math all the way out. So let's say he signs the 1-year, $5 million deal, and then next year gets a 4-year, $100 million deal, which is the max. The max he's eligible for is $25, $26 million a year. So then he will be getting $105 million over 5 years. You don't get this year back. I think this thing's going to end up landing at about 4 years, about $80 million. So that ends up being a $20 million average over 4 years, as opposed to if he takes a qualifying offer and then gets the 5 for $100, a $21 million average over 5 years. Like, and you have the locked in security. Because we've seen, I saw Nerlens Noel turn down something to take a qualifying offer. Now he's playing for $2 million.
I think they had a different health history at this point in their career.
They
had a different, their resumes were not the same. The only thing was the same was they decided to do the same.
And the offer. He was offered $17.5 million.
But you're assuming he, A, stays healthy, and B, puts up the same numbers. How critical is it for Capela that
Had any health problems with him. We're not concerned about his health. He's very, very athletic. A young player like this, when you don't have the clear, defined stars, all right? So everyone's in this big three thing. Let's, man, we got to get three stars. That's not available everywhere. So now you got to throw in some stuff. You got to throw in a center, which OKC has done with Paul George. Let's go Russell and Stephen. He's our third. And there's other teams that have had to do the same because there's only one Klay, Steph, and KD, Draymond. So everyone else has to throw their version of it, and typically you're coming up with a player like Capella as your third star.
I just think that your situation, I think, is different in that the money that he is being offered here is so enormous. And again, I'm not saying he's got to take 5 years, 85, but I personally would be shocked if he ends up taking the qualifying offer. I think this is they're going to come to him and say, listen, here is what you will make over the next 4 or 5 years, depending on its 4-year or 5-year deal. You cannot forget the fact that the Rockets play in Texas, where there are no state taxes, which on a contract like this matters. Here is the security of it. If you take the qualifying offer and you even want to do the Lloyd's of London, insure yourself against your future deal, what that's going to cost you, it would be, we haven't seen a player of Capella's caliber not end up reaching an agreement. Sometimes it takes, in recent memory, sometimes it takes into September, but there's also no competing offers. Like, Dallas took themselves out of the game when they signed DeAndre Jordan.
Is he worth the money on the open market? Sure, he is, but the Rockets probably know that as well, mm-hmm. and are figuring they could deal and negotiate with him. How important is he to the success that they had last year on this team?
Chris Paul is not the defender that he was. Harden just now woke up and realized that defense, it's legal. You can play some. All right? They just lost two of their top four defenders.
Yes.
Capella is their best defender. Like, he is critical to what they do. They are not going to be able to outscore Golden State. You got to be able to get some stops. You got to be able to get some switches. You got to be able to have a center that can switch to the one, to the two, to the three, to the four, and be able to hold up in spurts. They have that with him. So I believe that he's just as critical as last year them getting Chris Paul. And it's less of a risk than giving Chris Paul that max contract that they gave him.
Listen,
based on Nick's math with the way he's going to deteriorate, you better get an insurance policy.
No, Chris, right. Chris, absolutely. Chris Paul's deal is they're paying him 4 years, but they're really paying him for the first two, and then the back end of it's a bonus. Clint Capella is, if the Rockets were to lose him, the thing is they won't, but if they were to lose him, forget them being the second best team in basketball. Like, that's gone. He is the key to their defense. The reason that I think the wing defenders, a reason Mbamute's losses are somewhat overstated, is because they have a great defensive point guard in Chris Paul, a great do-everything defender in PJ Tucker, and one of the best rim defenders in basketball in Clint Capella. He is their most important defender. There's a reason when we talk about them last year, we don't say when CP3 and Harden play. We say when CP3, Harden, and Capella play, they were 53-7.
I'm looking forward to P.J. Tucker being that defender because he's going to have to guard LeBron with no type of help, not throwing all those bodies at him. So I think they're making a mistake because I don't think P.J. Tucker can hold up as a defender all season long. That's it.
Okay.
All right, we'll leave it at that. That's where we're leaving it, what he said. Hey, coming up, is Rajon Rondo bad for Lonzo Ball? Next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, the Bills running back LeSean McCoy is under investigation from the NFL and Georgia police following a home invasion at a residence occupied by his former girlfriend. The woman's attorney alleges she was attacked in her sleep by a man demanding gifts and cash she had previously received from McCoy. A picture was posted by her friend on Instagram showing her brutal injuries and blaming McCoy for the incident. The picture has since been deleted, reportedly at the request of the woman's attorney. The police have not named any suspects. As for the Bills, they say they're continuing to gather information. McCoy put out the following statement regarding the Instagram post. For the record, the totally baseless and offensive claims made against me today on social media are completely false. Furthermore, I have not had any direct contact with any of the people involved in months. Cece, I'll start with you. What was your reaction when you heard this story?
I was shocked by the pictures. I hate to say it. I'm not shocked by the story. I'm not going to say that I've gotten callous over the gravity of the pitchers and everything, but I have been around the NFL for a long time. So I would say it's hard to shock me. It was kind of like this started with the Ray Rice video. Not saying this situation, but like this Shady McCoy situation, it started like, say for instance, if you had saw that video first, like the way we saw the pictures first. Now, I'm not saying he's guilty of what Ray Rice did, but the magnitude of it starting that way compared to it starting allegedly that, but we saw the pictures first. So it was, that would take anyone back. But I had to ask myself the question, why are NFL players involved in so many violent crimes? And just this offseason, you know, the Super Bowl was in February. In 5 months, if you look at the number of players that have been current players and former players that have been arrested, I'm not talking about DUI. I'm not talking about stuff like that. I'm talking about assaulting a woman, the elderly. I'm talking about from Alton Smith in March, his arrest for assaulting a woman, to Kellen Winslow Jr. last month, assault, accused of assault, rape of an elderly person. Like burglary, like, I mean, these things are amounting, like.
Brandon what? Browner last week.
Attempted murder.
Attempted murder is what he was, they added the charge.
Kidnapping.
I mean, he's been arrested. He's facing life in prison.
Yeah, so these allegations, if I look at them with all these other things that people are accused of, man, to me, man, the NFL, they definitely have a violence problem. Like, and this is one of the reasons that I was so upset about Colin Kaepernick and his inability to play in the league. Well, people said, well, this got nothing to do with Cap. Well, the ability to hold a job. All these other guys were gainfully employed by the NFL. These owners look past. It wasn't like some of these guys, Alton Smith, how many times he got to be arrested? He's got gun charges. He's got assault charges. He had so many chances, but a guy like Colin, he took a knee. He couldn't play. So NFL owners, I believe they're very, very hypocritical of the way that they employ the players. They look beyond a lot of different things. But we as fans, we shouldn't just let this go. We shouldn't just accept this as, you know, this is normal off-season behavior. The number of violent crimes that the NFL and their former players have been involved in is at an alarming rate. I'm shocked about that.
Listen, I think it's important for the audience to understand the timeline of events here in this specific incident. Because I echo everything Chris just said, but I want people to understand here. LeSean McCoy and this woman were involved in a relationship. He ends up moving her into a house he has in Georgia. Over the course of the last year, they have an elongated dispute about her vacating that house. Now, those are, I don't know who's telling the truth there, but it would appear they had a court date scheduled yesterday about him trying to evict her from the house. When he went to training camp or OTAs, I should say, in June, and she went to a family member's graduation, he hired friends, family, and some other people to try to just take her stuff out of the house. She saw it on a home security system, had it stopped.
Called the police.
They have had an elongated dispute.
And they also have a kid.
They had a relationship. Supposedly broken off the relationship, whatever it is. And now, according to the police report, the night before they have a court date, someone comes into the house. I thought it was noteworthy in the police report. They said no forced entry. So maybe that means someone left a door unlocked, or maybe that means somebody had the alarm code. And the person who comes in the house asked for specific items. Again, the police say it was a target. It wasn't a random home invasion, just nice houses on a block. It was, we're coming here to this house for these specific items. Mm-hmm. Now, it could be it could have been one of the movers, totally unrelated. And LeSean, when he was there, saw items. Like, I want to come back and get them. Or it could be what the friend is implying, if not saying, which is, LeSean sent someone there to go get the items. We don't know what happened there. We do know that the woman, and the pictures would lead you to believe, she was pistol whipped and brutally injured, and a second woman there was injured to a lesser degree. I don't know if LeSean McCoy did this, right? We don't know. But that's the timeline of what he's being accused of. To Chris's point, and what I think the audience has to understand, and this is why Chris and I... And it's very interesting working with you because you take such intense pride in the NFL. Like, you take ownership almost of the shield and of the league, but you are also very honest about what and who is in that locker room.
Yes. And I mean, it's not your right to play in the NFL. It's a privilege. Like, there's less than 20,000 people that have ever done this job. Like, we act like there's millions of them. This is our 99th season in the NFL. And there's only that many players to play. Yes, I feel it's my obligation to be honest about what I've seen throughout the years.
And the reason I bring it up, and I just want to, the audience to understand, correct me if you disagree with me, and this is what's so unsettling, whether LeSean McCoy did this or not, or had it done or not, or orchestrated it or not. There, for every one of these, there's a list of guys that have had some type of incident this offseason involving the police. Some type of, whether it's from DUI all the way up to, like, attempted murder. How many guys do the fans think have been involved in something similar, and it doesn't raise the level of the police, it doesn't raise the level of the media, and it doesn't... We know that women who are victims of domestic violence in large part don't report it initially, if ever. We know women who are victims of sexual violence very often, more often they're not to not report it than to report it. So when you see... And we also know people, by the way, on average, drive drunk more than 50 times before they're arrested for it one time. So when you see a half dozen guys arrested for DUI, another half dozen arrested for some type of assault on or sexual crime on a female, and there's only 1,800 guys in the league, you do wonder and you do ask yourself, how often is this happening that we don't know about? But you know who might know? Teammates, coaches, GMs, to your point about Cap, the people that might have been preventing him from coming in the league, knowing some of this is in their locker room. Go ahead,
you
Jenna.
You said, CC, that the NFL has a violence problem, and I'm intrigued by that. And it's a violent sport. You're asked to basically go out with all the strength you have and all the muscle you have and take out the opponent in front of you, and aggression and all of it. But talk to me about the correlation between... You played that sport. You're not a violent man. But there is some correlation between the sport, and this is a long list. This is the offseason. This isn't in the last year. I mean, that's in a short period of time. You know, as someone who does, as Nick said, take such pride over the NFL and the league, having a league that you played in for so long, tell me about the correlation in there, and what does it say about the NFL?
Well, there has to be some type of similarities, because when I look at the police bloggers, I don't see as many NHL, Major League Baseball, and NBA players being involved in the same thing. Now, typically, we have the same type of upbringing as far as playing in sports. Our ability to be able to think on the move and be high achievers. So what is the difference? Is it the violence of football that correlates into off-the-field violence in the players? I think it's something that they should look at. I believe that playing football, especially playing at a high level, I can only see the numbers, that there would have to be something between how the game is played and the overall behavior. What I'm not going to do is just become tone deaf to the pitchers and to the stories.
And I think that my hypothesis would be multi-layered. One is, I think a violent game might attract some violent people. People that are naturally, unrelated to football, naturally inclined to violence.
I believe that is true.
Right. Like, just logic would dictate. You're naturally inclined to violence. This is a place where you are encouraged to hit people. You are encouraged to let some of that aggression out. I think that's part of it. I think another part of it is something you said last week. I don't even remember what we were talking about. But you said there are two Chris Carters. The one you're going to meet when you were playing. The one you're going to meet in your day-to-day life. And the person I had to become once I crossed those white lines. The mental state I had to get in order to go do that. And I think for some people, those lines start to blur.
Yeah.
And it's hard. I think it's hard to actually become two people. And that the longer... And so, I think that would dictate.
And I think that it becomes harder because you're such a regimented person. And every summer, I get used to football. I get used to being able to take out my aggression. I used to be people take out their aggression on me. And doing that through 4 years of high school, 3 years of college, and 16 years in the league, I had to find something when I was 37 that I could put that aggression into. And that's what I see, because a lot of this list of players are former players. So now, what do they do with that aggression? You have to be able to find a spot for it. I'm very, very fortunate I have been able to find one.
All right. We'll have to take a break. Much more First Things First right after this. Back here, First Things First, NBA analyst Sarah Kustok joins us. It's always going to be a good time when Sarah's
here. Not sick of me yet.
Are you kidding?
Might be.
No.
But as long as, as long as
you guys got to change the copy and everything. You guys go NBA analyst, also, NFL sideline reporter for Fox.
Reporter.
I mean, shoot.
She's expanding portfolio.
Yeah, she's like Cardi B. She's dripping in money.
I love
it. That's right.
Can I rap like Cardi B? Right?
Oh, that's, you were close. Cardi B is one of my favorites. Yeah. That is correct. You got it right. I can't believe you got it right, but you got it right.
Bet you didn't think you'd be compared to Cardi B on First Things First. Lakers suddenly NBA topic again. It's been a few minutes. The kind of cool where you can talk point guard battle in the offseason, that kind of cool. Lonzo Ball enters year two. Rajon Rondo just got signed to a one-year deal. It is Lonzo versus Rondo. Will it be a mentor relationship or a I-want-the-starting-job relationship? Head coach Luke Walton had nothing but praise for the young point guard.
Well, I think it's going to be great for Lonzo. You know, Lonzo, to me, is a player that he even shines more with the more talent that's around him because he's unselfish, he's a winner, and he wants to get, you know, other people involved all the time. So, you know, when you get shooters and all-stars around him, I think that just brings out what he does best, and he's going to continue to develop his personal game as well. So, obviously, with between the injuries, and how much we struggled last season when he was out, we felt like it was important for us to get another point guard that we could rely on when, you know, if he were to continue, you know, dealing with those type of injuries. And we feel very confident that Rondo is that guy. We also think Rondo can really help teach Lonzo the NBA game and the nuances of the point guard position because they both play the game in an unselfish manner. So they're going to be a good mix for each other.
Sarah, you watched Lonzo play last year. You heard all the criticism just of his shot and whatnot, and also it was his first year getting used to it. What are realistic expectations now as he enters the second year?
I wish we could look at Lonzo without the outside distraction of his father. And you look at the numbers Lonzo put up last year. He was 10-7-7,
yep.
A very solid year. He played 52 games, so I think when we look into this season, and obviously with the torn meniscus at this point, just him being healthy, number one priority. I love the way Lonzo plays. Does he need to improve his shot? Absolutely.
Yes.
But what Luke Walton said is 100% true. He's unselfish. He moves the ball. He, to me, thrives under pressure. He plays much better with the talent around him because he understands where to get the ball, who to get the ball to. I think this addition of Rajon Rondo is going to be excellent for him. One, because of the mind and the willingness that I believe Rondo will have to help him. If you remember two seasons back when Rajon Rondo was with the Chicago Bulls,
yes.
Those young guys loved him because he was able to mentor them. And there was a lot of noise coming out of Chicago, and obviously it was a turbulent season.
Yeah, they had some tough moments in there.
The veterans didn't like him as much as the young players did.
As much as the rookies, because he took the rookies under his wing. He was able to help them along. And he had an excellent postseason until he hurt his hand. I mean, the Bulls really turned the corner because of him. But I believe that the competition will help get Lonzo better. I believe the film study, how diligent Rondo is in what he looks at and tendencies of the other teams, how to help him scout, how to understand what to look at. In whole, I think this will be an excellent thing for Lonzo Ball, and I believe that Lonzo is a player who will embrace that and embrace this challenge.
Yeah, Rondo's got a couple things on his resume that people might not like. They might not like the Carlisle thing, him getting the backcourt violation, not calling the play for the coach, but to me, he's been involved in positive things. Look at the big three in Boston when he was there. As the young guy, man, they relied on him to bring those guys together because there were some personalities. Ray Allen, KG, and Paul Pierce, they were not thinking of the same. All three of them were individual stars in their own right. Ray got traded there. He was a star. Paul Pierce, that was his team that he had to kind of relinquish some of that control to KG with his big personality. But Rondo, man, Rondo, when people talk about it, even when you look at the potential beef between Ray Allen and the rest of them, man, they called on Rondo a lot to bring them together.
And so, by the end of that era, Rondo was their best player.
Yep.
Absolutely.
By the end of it, Rondo was the best guy.
And I think that people forget what pro sports is about, and pro sports is about competition. The Lakers need a good backup point guard. Lonzo also needs to be pushed physically and mentally. That's why you bring Rondo there. I don't see any negatives out of him being there. You should have someone as the backup who can be a starter. You know why? Because it's a real threat to the player compared to bringing in a guy who's a career backup. Lonzo's not going to be, okay, listen, y'all can tell me what you want to. I'm getting ready to start because that guy, I'm way better than him. He's never been a starter. You can't say that with Rondo. So I believe it's a great addition to Lonzo in his repertoire, what he's going to be able to do by adding someone like Rondo who can get in his head and explain a lot of the things about basketball from a point guard's
And you particularly need a very competent backup when the guy in front of him missed 30 games last year.
Yes.
And so but let's just assume health, because let's wish for help for the whole league. You now have 48 minutes of the Rockets talked last year. We're going to have 48 minutes of A-plus point guard play. The Lakers now have 48 minutes of what I would imagine will be good to very good point guard play. Like, not what the Rockets have. But Jenna raised an interesting question in the morning meeting, because she said the Western Conference, how does this point guard situation stack up to the point guards out west? So I kind of, listen, Rockets, Golden State, Portland, OKC. Those are the four best.
Yep.
But after that, so, like, what's New Orleans' situation? Drew Holiday's great, but he's really a shooting guard. Yep. Like, he was at his best, and they just lost Rondo. Denver, I like Jamal Murray. Don't necessarily love their depth. And then Utah's Rubio. The Spurs, Parker's gone. It's DeJounte Murray. Minnesota, Jeff Teague. Like, could you make the argument the Lakers go into this year with Lonzo as is, with Rondo as is, with the fifth best point guard situation out west? Like, I think you probably could. So it's not... We focus on the shooting, and the shooting has to get better. Like, people say, well, Jason Kidd's shooting can get better till much later in his career. Jason Kidd was a sturdier player, was bigger
yes.
to a degree, and a generational talent. Lonzo is...
he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
We throw those around like they're just Krispy Kreme donuts. You know, everybody's one of those. Like,
no.
Jason Kidd was a phenomenal athlete, which ended up being a phenomenal basketball player.
Kidd was the best player on back-to-back finalists. And then was, in year, like, close to 20, or year 15, was the point guard and NBA champion. So he doesn't have to quite be Jason Kidd in order to be very successful.
I want to see Lonzo finish better at the basket
yes.
and at the rim, because he does not shoot as well from the perimeter, that
mm-hmm.
he needs to improve. But also, I think that will come with time, with strength. And to me, that's one of the aspects. If he has the ability to be a threat in getting to the rim consistently, that will help him playing alongside LeBron James. I mean, we know that LeBron is going to have the ball in his hands quite a bit as well. So he needs to continue to be able to understand how to play off the ball when needed.
Yeah, let's look at three things since his rookie year ended. Now, no rookie is under any scrutiny. We haven't had any rookie in the topic bar, have we? Any other rookie we're talking about?
No.
No. So, for me, Lonzo, he handled the pressure. But let's just look since the offseason. We know he had surgery on his meniscus and everything, and I believe that to be he will be healthy. But offseason meeting with Magic Johnson watching film, added LeBron James, and then now a backup point guard, potential sub-starter in Rondo. I believe the Lakers organization really helped him.
Talk to me a little bit about pace. Last year, the Lakers were such a fast team. LeBron wasn't used
to
that.
That's a key thing. And when we evaluate Lonzo, and I'll be quick here, we need to not just do the counting stats. Because he was 10-7-7 last year. They were the fastest pace in basketball. What's that
mean?
Yeah,
and I immediately was like, okay, let's do this now. They're going to be, okay, it's his second year. He should probably be anywhere 14 to 16 points a game.
But they're not going to have as many scoring opportunities. They're going to, not only has LeBron never been on the fastest team in the league, he's never been on a team that was top 10 in pace. He doesn't play fast. So his counting stats won't take the jump you might expect. So watch his percentages, whether it's field goal percentage or even assist and rebound rate. Now, speaking of percentages, last point I'll make, whether it's Rondo or Lonzo, they might be the fifth best point guard situation in the West. They are the single worst point guard free throw situation in the NBA. Both these guys are career sub 60% free throw shooters. That's one thing you got to watch. Late in games, you typically inbound it to your point guard. Neither one of these guys has shown the ability to hit those. That's one small thing to watch for both of them.
All right, good stuff. Sarah, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Coming up, who's challenging Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady as the best quarterback in the NFL? That's next. This is First Things First.
We only got three games left. Semifinal today, third place game Saturday, and then World Cup final. Biggest event in world sports
man,
for 4 years.
Yesterday, downtown New York, I thought the subway trains were running above the ground. Man, it was people cheering. I mean, just the passing, they were cheering. Like it was an amazing experience watching the World Cup in New York.
It has been really cool being here for this tournament because it's such a diverse community and so many different people.
You can go to any bar that supports any team, and they'll be like, "Oh, have you been to the Croatia bar on 9th Avenue? They only show."
That's where I'm watching today's game, the Croatia bar on 9th Avenue.
I'll be there with all my friends.
Awesome, rooting for England. Why are you going to the Croatia bar to root for England?
That's what I want to know.
Trying to get your butt kicked, Jenna
Wolf. That's why I want
to
know.
It's not a heady play.
We are going.
I see the Senegal team, they're on Canal Street all the time. My brother, what up, football player?
We're going, we're gonna get to Carmelo Anthony in a second. Focus.
Would you like
first,
a bag?
Summer league action. Grayson Allen back to our cut, finishes with authority. Grayson Allen had a good game yesterday.
Grayson Allen, I'm glad we can talk about the highlights because typically that's what you want to do from the summer league. Good backdoor cut. Fundamentally, a really sound player, but better athlete than people knew.
Yep. Next up, Spurs rookie Lonnie Walker throwing down the one-handed putback slam.
How high do you think he could jump if he didn't have the hair you don't like, see? That can't be the most aerodynamic haircut.
No, it's got to be heavy, man. It's got to be heavy.
I like it.
I'm looking forward to seeing him develop in San Antonio with that staff.
He's going
to
be a really good player, I bet. Spurs, just pick him, man.
Finally, Lakers-Knicks, Josh Hart. Driving through the lane, throwing down a vicious left-handed yam.
Ooh, there's a little athleticism. I don't know how much longer he's going to be a Laker. He might be involved in some potential Kawhi Leonard trade, but he's a nice little player.
Nick, your guy told the Lakers brass he loves Josh Hart. Loves his game, loves the way he plays and everything. So watch and see.
Maybe they
the
hold
king,
on to him.
The king might hold on to the little Hart.
Time for Drawing a Blank. Today, Croatia and England face off at 1 over on Fox in the World Cup semifinals. This is the furthest England has advanced since 1990, and the furthest Croatia has made it since 1998. So, CC, the winner of today's match will be England, but who do you think it's going to be?
Yeah, well, Jenna, you told me about a number of years ago when England decided to bench one of their stars, take him off the national team, Wayne Rooney, and then they decided to go, well, not with the King, but with Kane.
With
and
Kang.
And he made them the star of their national team. It's paying dividends. England gets through first final in how long?
Yep, since 1990.
There you go.
I got Croatia. They're the big underdog in this game. I get this. I love the way they've advanced in the knockout round of this tournament. Back-to-back penalty kick wins. Ivan Rakitic with the winners in both of those games. But their star player is the guy Jenna mentioned, Luka Modric. He's been outstanding throughout this tournament. I can't give you some great analysis on this, to be honest. Just my gut feeling. England should win. England's the better team. England's the favorite. I think Croatia wins this football game.
How about Croatia?
Afternoon.
Less than 4 million people. And they put together a World Cup team.
Same Uruguay's got 3.4 million people. They got, population.
We're going to be ready.
We got to be.
4 years. We're going to be ready for this. All right. On to the NFL.
They better go to some hoods.
Former Texans wide receiver.
Mbappe.
Andre Johnson. Is singing the praises of DeAndre Hopkins, saying that Hopkins is, quote, arguably the best in the game. However, wide receiver is one of the deepest positions with guys like Julio and Odell. So, Nick, the best wide receiver in the NFL right now is blank.
You asked me this in 6 months, and I think the answer is going to be, once again, Odell Beckham Jr. But coming a year off injury, I can't put him there. So I have to go with the guy who's been the most productive and doesn't get credit for how many spectacular catches in tight coverage he can make. That's Antonio Brown. His numbers are unimpeachable. His production's unimpeachable. And I don't think we give him enough credit for being that small and that skillful and tough, as that hit demonstrates right there.
He might be the best football player for that size the NFL has ever seen. If you look at his dimensions and size, the only reason why I can say that is not because I've been watching football that long, because, Nick, you presented that question to me.
Best wide receiver under 6 feet ever.
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 Right there. And because of his quarterback situation with Ben Roethlisberger and their ability to ad lib, to me, he's the best wide receiver and will be for the next couple years.
All right, let's stick with football. The 2019 Madden ratings were released yesterday. Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady both received an overall rating of 99, the highest possible rating. So, CC, the quarterback with the highest rating on Madden should be blank.
Aaron Rodgers. I've never seen anyone. I don't know about Madden. I don't know about the kids that make the video game. But I have never seen anyone throw the ball with the velocity that Aaron throws it, with the variance of how he can throw it, and how quick he can throw it. He can be off platform. That means, Jenna, when your legs aren't set. He could be running to his left. He could be scrambling to his right. There is no throw that he can't make. Aaron Rodgers is clear.
I totally agree with Chris Carter. The answer is Aaron Rodgers. What I disagree with and what the audience didn't see was when Jenna's reading the question, she's like, the Madden ratings. No, no, don't be flippant or show disgust towards what is arguably the greatest video game franchise ever. No disrespect to FIFA.
Okay,
listen, Ms. Wolf. Madden, you can play the game, or you can do what I like to do, which is not actually play the game. It's a little franchise mode. Do a little draft, a little free agency.
Such
simulate
a
the
nerd.
Season. See how good
Loving,
of a
but
see how
nerd.
I can handle the cap. See if I can acquire a few extra first.
I can't handle how nerdy that is.
I will buy this game. I will never actually play the football game, but I will manage multiple
making
teams.
My case.
More importantly, do you go into the category where they have the legends and unlock the legends?
What? Yeah, I do. I got you,
Yeah,
see?
No problem.
I got you, see?
Because
no
I keep
problem.
Getting that check from them. Unlock me.
I don't think that's how it works. Get a new check every time you're unlocked, like a movie royalty.
No. What they do is that the more times you're unlocked, then the more times they'll request you.
Oh.
Okay, Madden got me on the payroll.
Oh, okay.
Don't mess it up.
I ain't even on the payroll, and I'm giving them all this love. Go ahead.
Oh, boy. On
hey,
to
Madden,
the NBA.
Send some free stuff, too.
Where, just ask for it. Yeah. Just come right out and ask for it. Where most of the top picks, don't beat around the bush, most of the top picks from this year's draft are showcasing their talent at the Summer League. Odds are out for the Rookie of the Year. And despite not even playing in Vegas, number 3 overall pick, Luka Doncic, is at the top of the list. Nick, the favorite to win Rookie of the Year, in your opinion, should be blank.
Luka Doncic. It's no question about it. I mean, this guy, we've never seen someone as a teenager dominate the second-best league in the world, EuroLeague, the way he did. He's been he was unbelievable over there. I think he's the most ready. And I think the Mavericks are actually going to try for that 8th playoff spot this year. They brought in DeAndre Jordan. They're not
yes.
tanking. Mm-hmm. Dirk is still there. To me, Doncic is a no-brainer.
I love the fit. They're being in Dallas. We've seen San Antonio and Dallas, two of the prominent landing spots to develop these European players. Great fit for what they're trying to do. I like their coach. I believe he's really underrated. I do like what he does, especially from a game planning, half court, man, dead ball situation. So Luka Doncic, to me, is Rookie of the Year.
I'm going with Ben Simmons for the third year. Yesterday.
There's going to be a time next year Jenna's going to call him a rookie just off that. Watch. Just watch.
Yesterday in Vegas, Carmelo Anthony reportedly met with potential suitors. Last season, he averaged a career low in minutes per game, points per game, and field goal percentage. However, there are still some teams willing to roll the dice with him. So, Nick, Carmelo's next team should be blank.
I think his next team should be and will be the Houston Rockets. I think he'll get there. I am optimistic that Melo will be better than he was last year, which was far and away the worst year of his career. I think it's the Houston Rockets.
Yeah, Nick said he looks for Melo to make some changes. He's had this traumatic experience. I don't believe it's traumatic when someone pays you money not to be able to do your
not
job
money,
and go
much?
Home. Absolutely. You don't have to go to Oklahoma this year for $27 million. Good Lord. Uh-huh. You know what? So I'm going to give him something really traumatic. Send him to the Washington Generals. That's who he should be playing against the Harlem Globetrotters. You know why? Because he don't have to be no defense. Hey, and you know something? You don't even have to sweat in offseason with that hoodie thing trying to fool us again. You can put on your little summer weight.
He thought the whole thing through.
Yeah, absolutely. They asked me a question. Man, what team should he play for? Man, the general, sign him up.
Fantastic.
This level
no
of
defense. Like, let's do this. He's already got his championship, intramural championship at Syracuse.
Intramural? Intramural?
Oh, didn't
the greatest freshman season in the history of the NCAA means nothing to
yeah,
you?
Yeah, which led to being one of the most disappointing careers in 15 years in the NBA.
Oh, disappointing. First ballot Hall of Famer, scoring champion, gold medalist.
Oh, yeah, traumatic.
Best player
traumatic.
On a Western Conference
go home,
team
Jenna.
10 years ago.
For $27 million.
Don't go to Oklahoma this
for
year.
For $27 million. Coming
you
up.
You don't have to play with Russ anymore.
For $27 million. Why isn't Adam Silver worried about the Warriors dominating? That's next. This is First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Check us out next week. We'll be in Washington, D.C. for the MLB All-Star Game, and we'll have All-Stars and Hall of Famers joining us live from inside the stadium. It's always fun when we go on the road. We've gone on the road one other time, And we had a great time.
It was, we were at Ohio State.
Yep.
That was fun. This is going to be in at the ballpark Monday and Tuesday.
Yep.
Night, day of the Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game. I cannot wait. Should be, and we have, we can't tell you everyone yet. We got a nice list of some guests joining us that week.
Do we know who the guests are, really?
Yeah, I do. I do know. I saw the list yesterday.
Time now
for can't tell you yet.
Your World Cup wake-up. France got the 1-0 win over Belgium thanks to a 51st-minute header from center back Samuel Umtiti. France now advances to its third World Cup final since 1998. Nick, how good did France look yesterday?
Listen, holding Belgium scoreless is a hell of a feat when they have the type of midfield and strikers that they have. I thought France would win, but I said I thought it could be a high-scoring game, similar to their game against Argentina, like a 4-3-2, 4-3 type of game that obviously is not what ended up happening. Listen, this team has won every game they've played in this tournament except for the one game that didn't matter. Their final game of group stage was a 0-0 draw when they had already advanced. They've looked like the best team in the world for the last month.
Yeah, and the set piece, the one letdown that Belgium has, they have a corner kick there. The defender's too far in the box, as Nick pointed out to me and that he saw in the video, protecting the near post. That's how they get the header for the 1-0 win. France has played excellent football in this tournament.
It's going to be a fun matchup when they play England in the finals.
Or Croatia.
Time for some England stories to start your morning. Brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. Restricted free agent Clint Capela reportedly turned down a 5-year, $85 million deal. According to reports, he was looking for something in the 4-year, $100 million range. Nick, do the Rockets need to do whatever it takes to keep Clint Capela?
Listen, they will bring him back. And I think the Rockets know, and Clint knows, hey, if you really want 4 years, $100 million, go get another team to sign
we'll
you that offer sheet. We'll match it. But no other team. There's 30 teams in the league. Nobody signed him to that offer sheet. Mm-hmm. They'll bring him back, and I don't think it'll be on the qualifying offer. I think they will get a long-term deal done, but it might take some time now.
Also, I believe Houston stuck with him. When you look at them losing Trevor Ariza, them losing the Cameron Prince.
LRMN. Luke Richard Mbah-Mukhi.
The Cameron Prince, man.
Oh, sorry.
He's got two names, bro. I already mastered the other name. Okay. I've moved on. As being their best defender, they need Capela in the middle. So I believe Houston, their franchise, they are stuck. They're going to have to pay him.
And when you say stuck, you think he's an excellent player. You just mean they got no options.
Yes, absolutely.
Gotcha.
Moving on to Summer League, Trae Young had a solid night yesterday, scored 24 points, including 7 of 13 from three-point land. CC, you starting to feel better about Trae Young?
No.
No.
I'm like, why should I? I mean, 7 to 13? I mean, I've watched all the games. We've gone over this. No, he's a small guy that's got some range. He's not going to get any taller. He's not going to bulk up and get any bigger.
He'll bulk up a little bit. Everybody bulks up a little bit in the NBA. Steph bulked up a little bit.
When was the last time anybody accused Steph of being bulky?
No, but he wasn't.
Let's just watch how that happens, all right? I know that's not going to happen. He's never going to be a bulky player. He weighs 150 pounds now.
Right.
So 160 is what? Hulk Hogan.
No, but my point, you said he's not going to bulk up. He'll fill out. Just like Steph was this frail coming in. Now, he's not going to be Steph. No one is saying he's going to be Steph. But what he did have was the best offensive freshman season anyone's had since Kevin Durant. I'm not, though, going to overreact to this game, just like I didn't overreact to the 1-of-11 game he had to start Summer League. He's going to have some ebbs and flows, and fairly or unfairly, he's going to be compared to the rookie he got traded for at the draft, Luka Doncic, who I think is going to be an instant impact guy. I think Trae Young might take some time.
All right, moving on. Finally, many have said the Warriors are bad for the NBA, winning 3 of the last 4 titles, and that was before they added Boogie Cousins. Kamish, Adam Silver disagrees, saying, I don't think it is necessarily bad that the Warriors are so dominant. See, you agree with Adam Silver?
Well, I know Adam has to say the right thing, and that's his product. They're the best team out there. It would have been horrible for him to say, no, they're not good for our business. No, he did the right thing by saying yes. Because the popularity of the game, so it has not crushed the NBA. And the NBA, to me, this is as popular as the NBA has been the last 15 years. I still think people don't like it, but the optics are on it. How they got there, people don't like. If they had done it organically, if they had done it just with Klay, with Steph and Draymond, and continue to build on that after switching coaches with Steve Kerr, I think people would feel different. When you go out and add Kevin Durant, and then they put two more titles, because they only had won. Mm-hmm. You know, so now I don't think it's good for competitive balance. I haven't changed that since even knowing the day that Kevin Durant went there, now with them having two straight titles.
Listen, you're totally right that there's not, Adam Silver can't say anything against this, or else, the Warriors got a very fortunate whistle in that series against the Rockets, but let's say he went the other way, and game one of the finals for that matter, but let's say he went the other way. You can't have the commissioner on the record saying, the Warriors not great for the league, and then a critical game, the whistle goes against them, and there's all those conspiracy theories, the fix is in. So he has to say these things. I think people will say dynasties are good in the NBA. The league's always had dynasties. Yes, but they've been, if such a thing exists, competitive dynasties. And by that, I mean the Lakers and Celtics in the 80s were almost dueling dynasties. And no matter how good one got, the other was there to try to stamp them out. The Bulls in the 90s are a special thing because it wasn't until the Jazz last couple of years you looked at one team. But the Bulls in the 90s, as good as Pippen was, and as good as we now look at Phil Jackson, that was, we felt, about a singularly great player. And so it didn't feel like the deck was stacked. It was like Michael Jordan got played for somebody. Whoever he plays for is going to be killing people.
And right. And when they went out and got Rodman, it wasn't as if they were adding a player like Kevin Durant. He was phenomenal at what he did, but what we saw Golden State do, we had never seen anyone do that.
And when they added Rodman, they hadn't won the last 2 years because Jordan wasn't there.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So it was a different. There hasn't been anything quite like this. And so I understand television ratings are at all time highs, and we talk they're 11 month a year sport now. I get that. But what is better for the day-to-day part of the league was not Golden State not existing, but there to be other plausible cases for six or seven teams to win a championship. Even during Jordan's heydays, early on, it was like, can the Blazers get there? Could the Knicks get there? And I'm just naming a few. Later on, Sonics, Rockets, Spurs, Jazz, Pacers.
And this year, we're talking about teams just taking a year off because it's a given who's most likely going
to
win.
This year, we're going to try to convince ourselves the Rockets can get to where they were, even though these guys added Boogie, and maybe LeBron can do something Herculean. I don't think that's good. It's oddly enough, I think it's actually been very good for the NBA offseason. I think we're talking about November to March, where I think it hurts because the regular season doesn't seem quite as meaningful.
All right, let's move on to some football. After finishing last year 3-13, the New York Giants are primed for, well, let's face it, anything better than that. Eli Manning says the team's in a great position to do it, especially since he'll have his favorite target, Odell Beckham, back. Odell only played 4 games last year. Eli said Odell, quote, looked healthy when they practiced together, and he's excited to get back out on the field. See, what's the biggest hurdle for Odell now after not playing football since October?
I don't think there's any hurdles with a broken bone, a small broken bone. I don't think there's any hurdles.
Not timing, not chemistry,
the
not
routes,
speed.
All the routes are still the same. Like, they got a new offense coordinator, they got a new head coach, but there's no new plays. It might be new terminology. So, no, I expect him to pick up right where I expected him last year to start the season, as long as Eli Manning is healthy, as long as they have some type of running game. So, no, there are no hurdles to get over when you're a wide receiver and you have a broken ankle or a small bone broken. No, there are no hurdles that you have to get over.
So that's really interesting to me because that is not what I would have thought. The injury unrelated. I'm not talking about will he recover from the injury, but this is the longest Odell's gone since he was a preteen without playing a tackle football game. Like, he didn't miss any substantial time in college. I'm not aware of a substantial. Maybe he had one in high school that I didn't see, but I don't think so, right?
Nope.
Like, so that's the part that I was curious about is when you go for the first time in your life, essentially, 10 months.
He's not learning any skill or anything over again. He's as fast or faster. He's as strong or stronger than any other point in his life. It's not as if he's got to get used to. It's not as if he had an ACL where there would be typically that year you're playing, even though you say you're healthy. It's not typically till that second year. So, no, there's no significant. He didn't get his neck injured, so it's not going to affect his overall ability to have confidence or put fear into him.
And it's not like he's working with a new quarterback. He's working with a quarterback that he just finished playing with.
Yeah, even if he did have a new quarterback, I wouldn't say that there was a whole bunch that he would be adjusting to, because when you're – people don't understand. When I'm given a number of a route to run, I have a certain place I have to get to on the field. That ain't got nothing to do with the quarterback. That's me versus the defense, working my technique to be able to get to an appropriate depth to get to the receiving area. I got a job to do. And having a broken bone is not going to limit me physically, emotionally, or mentally from doing that.
And there's nothing about that this is as long as he's gone without getting hit. I'm not, again, let's pretend he didn't have a broken bone. Let's just say he went on a Mormon mission for 10 months. Like, whatever the reason is, that he's away from the violence of pro football and the violence of football in general for the longest he's ever been away from
it. He's only been gone for a couple months. Like, he missed October, November, December. Like, that's it. Like, these kids, they've been playing football since they were 8 years old. Like, you don't forget those types of things. It's not like riding a bike, but when you're as good as Odell Beckham talking about playing receiver, it's like riding a bike.
All right. Let's take a break. Coming up, is Carmelo Anthony more about winning or filling the stat sheet? That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, Sarah Kustok is back with us. For that, we say thank you. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
You had more to say, and we have more to hear. Moving on to Carmelo Anthony. The Oklahoma City Thunder looking to try and trade the 10-time All-Star after just one season in OKC. The team reportedly allowed Melo to meet with both Houston and Miami ahead of his near and probably imminent departure there. Melo coming off a season in which he averaged a career-low 16.2 points a game. Sarah, what do you think his decision, Miami or Houston or somewhere else, will tell you about what Melo's priorities are?
I think it'll tell us everything about his priorities. We say elsewhere, I do believe that it will be Houston or Miami. We talk quite a bit about Houston in just some of his options in what he could do with that offense, some of the deficiencies defensively and how they play, also the role that he would have, whether or not he would be coming off the bench, if he has a possibility to start, given the departure of Trevor Ariza. Miami is really interesting to me, though. We, of course, know about his relationship with Dwayne Wade, how that would help persuade him there. That's a place I could see him potentially having an opportunity to have a starting role. Their roster has some movement. They have some young players that you could see how they're trying to figure out where to fit in. But Miami is not a team that, unlike Houston, is really contending for a title, let alone, I mean, they're contending to make it in the playoffs for next season as you look at it, and they still have a couple moves that they could make. But they're a team that likely would be in the bottom half of those final four playoff spots. So to me, if Melo chooses that, it would be more about playing time, about touches, about what role he would have on the team, mm-hmm. and also the ability to be in South Beach. And you look at this, I always feel like with players, I don't want to judge their decision. He has every right to go anywhere that he wants to go. If he wants to finish off his career and decide that he cares more about lifestyle, about environment, about what type of role that he has on the team, good for him. Like, I don't think that's necessarily a negative thing, but that will tell me about Carmelo Anthony that winning is not a priority to him as much as what it is that he's able to do on the floor.
Right. It's hard to prove that players don't want to win, but all you can really judge them on is what they say, what they do, and based on how they react to situations. The Miami situation, I think that people should know, him and Dwayne Wade have the same agent. Him and Udonis Haslam have the same agent. Wade and Udonis, we don't know what they're going to do for this season. So there's some connectiveness to him talking to Miami outside of Dwayne Wade and him being friends. So there's some business relationships there. Style, living in Miami, the potential to start there, those are real things. I don't judge a guy. If a guy wants to score, a guy don't want to win a championship, I played 16 years. When they make the list in all of sports of all the guys, the greatest players on that list didn't win a championship, I'm on that list. I don't mind being on that list. You know the reason why? I don't have no regret. I took care of my body. I did everything that I could do. The franchise I played on, we didn't have that opportunity. But it wasn't because of me. So I sit here today with no regret. Melo going to be on that list too. Charles Barkley's on that list. But those guys on that list, they won't be, when they get to my age, they won't be able to look back and say, you know something? I don't have no regrets because I could have took better care of myself. I could have done this a little bit different way. And that's the biggest difference. You don't have to win a championship to complete your career. He's made a lot of money. He's had a great career. Nick points out he's a Hall of Famer. But what people want at the end of their career, we can't change Carmelo. He's shown us 15 years he wants to score the basketball. He is not going to play a bunch of defense. And there is nothing that would indicate to me that in this maybe one of his last years that he's going to change.
Listen, we can disagree about whether or not the experience in Oklahoma City would be enough of a shock to the system to make him change. But I'm glad you mentioned Charles Barkley, because there are a lot of guys who we consider great players who were professional scorers who we don't talk about Bernard King historically, and we're like, man, that guy who didn't play no defense. We don't do that with Chuck. There are plenty of guys who have been great, respected, all-time NBA players who have Melo's profile. What is your job? Go out there and
score. George Gervin.
George, there's another great example. George Gervin. Like, it is in today's hyper-intensive not only analytics but discussion of sports platform that now we are picking apart everything.
And love that platform.
Of course I love that platform, but I also think if we're going to do it to these guys, then we also, when we are talking about guys historically, we have to say they'd have been put in the same damn blender. They'd have been dealing with this. It's not like Melo has been passing on defense while averaging 18 a game. He was passing on defense while leading the NBA in scoring while being the best player on a conference finalist team in Denver. Now, he's no longer that scorer. So now he has an obligation, if he wants to be on a winning team, to show a higher level of dedication to the defensive end, to take smarter shots. All those things are true, but I also don't think it's fair to say we know that he won't do that. We know that he can't do that.
This is what we've known. We've known for 15 years he's not done it. So it's easy to say today, what's going to be the next step? Year number 16, he's going to do that. That is not a reach. It's a reach to say he's willing to be a consummate role player and he's willing to put forth the effort to play defense. That's a reach to do because we have zero evidence. I got a bunch of evidence to support what I'm saying.
But how much do we think with the game change? Like now I think we look at the game and over the course of the past couple, and especially post, what we talk about a lot is playoffs and how playoff basketball is played. The switching defense, when we look at Houston, and Houston's not the one team we can go across the board, the switching defenses. So now, before we talk to old school players and they're like, we didn't switch, pick and rolls, you stay right with your man, you fight over screens. Now so much of the defense is predicated on switching. So teams and offenses and game strategies are picking out who's your weakest defender. We're gonna run our play, we're gonna 100%. Run our actions to get to that guy and get him, and that gets a player off the court. And that's what's happened so often in playoff basketball, and those players are exposed. And so to me, when you look at a team like Houston, I think we talk about it so much because it's become such an issue for players that even if they're such a prolific scorer, oftentimes when it matters or in the postseason, they can't stay on the floor because of the way the game has changed how it's played.
I totally agree with that, but there is a weird thing we do with defense versus offense, that defense almost becomes the more admirable trait. Like, here's something that's never discussed about someone on that team last year. Andre Roberson. Andre Roberson, who is a defensive player of the year caliber defensive player, cannot hit an open shot to save his life. We acknowledge that, but we don't hold it against him. We're just like, that's just who he is. That's just, with defense, we just assign, you should be better, you could be better, you need to be better.
Defense
we don't,
is an effort thing.
Sometimes. And sometimes it's an athleticism thing.
Okay,
and
so what is it with Melo?
I'd say it's a combination of both. He's not a high flyer. He's not a great athlete.
This is what I judge it on, Nick. How much energy do they have on the offensive end of the court? Now, this is what I'm worried about. They got James Harden. He got plenty of energy on the offensive end of the court, and he has shown through years on the defensive end, he don't have that same energy. So I judge it based on their energy and what they're capable of doing. Now imagine Harden on the defensive court and Melo on the defensive court for 35 minutes in the game. To me, that is not a championship team.
But we're not just knocking Melo for his defensive woes. There's also this talk of him not wanting to change his game in Oklahoma City. And there's a lot of people that would blame Melo for the reason that the three of them together didn't work out, that he didn't want to change the way he was shooting. He didn't want to, there was no, don't even ask him about coming off the bench, even if it was after the season. He wanted to be the exact same player, and he wasn't willing to change his game or put the work in or change his attitude or whatever, get himself in shape, whatever you want to call it. So it wasn't just the defense, and I think that's where the knock on Melo comes in as well.
Well, and that's why I think where he could be such an asset to a second unit and to a reserve unit. And
if he's willing to do it.
And that's the factor. And that, to me, is if he would buy in to understand how much of a benefit he could be for a team coming off the bench, surround him with different players that maybe their strength is defending, but he can be a number one option for a second unit, anchor that type of unit. He could be such a great advantage to a team, but it is about that buy-in.
And that's why you're saying his decision will dictate what is important to him.
Yeah.
And I understand if you guys don't care so much that 2 years ago, it was last year in New York, Melo was top five in the league, isolation scorer, top five in the league, mid-range scorer, high volume, top five in the league, catch and shoot, three-point shooter. Say that's 2 years ago. Forget that. We're talking about here and now, last year. He was awful in the playoffs. That was a six-game sample. Let's not forget that Carmelo Anthony was part of a five-man lineup that was the third best in the NBA last year. He's in that five-man lineup. Like, we can throw that out, and we can say Melo was nothing but trash last year. Melo was a more than competent third scorer for that team. Now, that is not what Houston needs. Houston needs something different. But the idea that Melo had no useful moments last year, that he was trash, he was awful in the playoffs. Worst playoff series of his career. And that's our most recent memory. And he's definitely not worth $28 million. But we can't forget the 78 games he played before that, and with Roberson, by the way, how quality that unit was.
All right, Sarah, stick around. Talk more basketball coming up. A former NBA All-Star thinks Boogie will, quote, destroy the league in a good way. Slang. Next on First Things First. Sarah Kustoff is back with us. We're going viral. Sixers center Joel Embiid had a great season, averaging 23 points and 11 boards. However, he is not satisfied and has been in the gym all summer. Check this out. Embiid will one-on-one with Jason Tatum and Mo Bamba.
This was a cool, they were doing basically King of the Hill thing. Scorer stays on, rotating between these three guys. Three.
This is incredible to see. It really shows you how well Embiid can move.
Oh, absolutely. But it's nice because it's very, very rare that you think, how can you play one-on-one with a seven-footer and it be competitive? So it's nice to see NBA players and the footage of guys who are competitive against each other in the East working out together.
I was going to say, who are the front runners for the East this year? Philadelphia, Boston, yep. And you got two of their star players.
And look at Tatum's body, by the way. If you saw in the playoffs, Tatum was getting bullied a little bit. You can already see Tatum filling out somewhat between year one and year two.
I might have to put my glasses on for that one. What? Did you guys see Ben Simmons in that one?
What?
Yeah.
Oh, no, these guys were shooting. No, he don't do that.
You know that was coming?
I knew that was coming. I knew that was coming.
Good jokes. A lot of people wondering how impactful DeMarcus Cousins will be coming off an Achilles injury. History dictates not very impactful. Very hard for an NBA player to come back strong from that type of injury. Elton Brand knows all about this. He was never the same after it happened to him. So file this one under irony. But he had this to say about Boogie. I think he's going to destroy the league once he comes back. I'm on a management staff, so I can't talk that much about it. But people are going to feel ridiculous for not giving him that money, in my opinion, even though he had an Achilles. You got all that. Sarah, will teams regret passing on Cousins?
I don't think they will regret passing on him because it's a risk. And I know there was a lot of talk about Golden State getting him, the price they got him at. Every other team had the opportunity to do the same thing. And the luxury I know we had talked about yesterday with Golden State is they're good with or without him. So they have the ability to take that gamble and not be hurt if it doesn't go through. I think with Boogie Cousins, there's a question about when he'll return, what type of player that he will return as. But the other factor that is, I think, one of the bigger reasons why team maybe didn't want to take that step is because of the locker room presence he is, the temperament he often shows on the court. I think there are character traits, and we've seen a lot of people that backed and supported Boogie and talk about him being a good teammate and the hopeful nature that he will continue to be that way with Golden State Warriors, but he's still got to prove that, and he hasn't proven that. So you factor in the injury, how he's going to return, and what he's going to do for the chemistry of the team, and I think a lot of other teams around the NBA wouldn't potentially want to take that chance given the fact that there were so many unknown factors heading into the season.
Yeah, there's a couple different ways you can try to argue Boogie Cousins going to Golden State. You can either talk about the Achilles, like the lack of a successful track record of professional athletes, let alone basketball players, just professional athletes that had come back and been as good as they were, or forget about being better, because we expect Boogie at 27 that he was going to still keep improving. Last season was his best NBA season on and off the court. We expect him to improve. We haven't seen that with people that have ruptured their Achilles. Then there's the thing of, in basketball, there's so much downtime. And what I believe with the general managers, Meyer said that, oh, we're just waiting on the playoffs. Let me tell you how many meetings that they're going to have to be around Boogie. How many times, how many hotel rooms, how many meals. They're not going to be on the court. So his personality is going to be one of the big things that they're going to be evaluating him on. In the NFL, it's not as valuable. You play one game a week. You're practicing at your own facility. You're only typically traveling. If you got a road game, you got eight of them, you're only traveling on Saturday. If you're injured, the injured player typically is not going. So all this downtime Golden State has from now until, say, February, when he comes back, man, there's a lot of chances for mistakes. There's a lot of chances for disappointment. And Boogie's personality, to me, it doesn't lead to saying, wow, you know something? This is a slam dunk. Boogie's going to do well with Golden State. It is something that we must watch as far as his overall attitude, because we are not going to see him on the court before February.
Well, so so interesting on the before February thing, because Tom Haberstroh did a really interesting deep dive into guys who have blown their Achilles around, like, basically late December, early January, around the time Boogie did. Six in recent memory. Three of them played the first game next year. The average recovery time has been 9.8, call it 10 months. So I think the Warriors now can be super cautious, which is why you're saying before February. I would set it more towards Christmas, beginning of January, but I don't think we're going to see him at the beginning of the year. Also on the Elton Brand thing, it is important to note that Elton Brand came back and then tore his labrum, tried to play through a torn labrum, and so that injury followed by the Achilles, followed by the labrum, is where you saw his career really go down. The Boogie last year was the third player ever to give you 25, 10, and 5. By the way, it is Wilt, Kareem, and Boogie last year. Even if he has a 20% reduction in his stats, the average Achilles guy is 8 to 10% his first year back. He goes from 25, 13, and 5.5 to 20, 10, and 4. That's
if he's on the Pelicans.
Correct. No, of course. I'm not saying he's going to do that with the Warriors. Yes. Absolutely. Yes. I totally agree. If he's featured the way he was on the Pelicans or on most teams, certainly not on the Warriors. I just mean that caliber of play. I think for the Warriors, because this is found money, unless he is, and the part C talks about is critical, unless he is just a disaster off the court, then I would say there's no reason for concern. And I think teams across the league, unless he's a disaster, will say, man, should we have taken the chance on Boogie?
I would also say with Golden State, he's going to, by all accounts, we assume, be playing for a championship, be playing for a ring. If he was with another of the 29 NBA teams, and you can kind of pick and choose which ones could have used him or not, if they weren't necessarily contending for a title, or depending what situation that he's in, I hope the best for Boogie. I hope that he is online and all about winning and does what he needs to do for the Warriors. But if he's not, if he's in a team that's fighting for the 7th, 8th spot in the playoffs or whatever it may be, is he playing for those wins for that team to be a great member of the team, or is he playing for his next contract?
That's a great question.
Because he was primed to sign a max contract, get a max offer. So given his circumstances, what would you see out of him if you were with another team? So it's hard to compare what we're going to see out of the Warriors as opposed to what we'd see with him and with another team.
I think we know that he didn't fare well with the losing culture in Sacramento, but you have to wonder if a guy like Boogie is better off on one of those middle teams that are always still contending, but he's the focal point and he's playing and he's getting the touches in where his strength is, or on a team like Golden State where, yeah, he is going to win and he wants the winning culture, but that reduction is going to come way down as far as touches and playing time, and who knows when he gets in.
Well, that's why this is a one-year thing. He absolutely would not sign up to be a secondary, tertiary, fourth option long-term. This is a one-year thing. But I do think it is noteworthy that Boogie, the year of his best behavior is the year his team won the most. Now, you can do a chicken and the egg thing. Did they win the most because he was on his best behavior, or was he on his best behavior because they were winning? But he wasn't just in a bad situation in Sacramento. In his 6 years in Sacramento, point guards, GMs, coaches, 6 years. I think it was 19. And so, like, it was arguably one of the most dysfunctional situations in sports. Now, again, we can do the chicken and the egg thing. How many of the coaching changes were because of Boogie? How much of this was his own doing? But I do think we have a small sample size of him being in a good situation. And we didn't hear a ton of the stories we heard out of Sacramento his last year and a half in New Orleans.
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you, I don't know how many point guards he played with. I don't know how many coaches he played with. But I know Boogie Cousins was getting evaluated for some serious things. All right? I don't know how many of the coaches that they determined that he had maybe a chemical imbalance or had some mental health issues. I don't know how many of the point guards. But that is a reality with Boogie Cousins, winning or losing. So it can be on a 5-year contract or on a 1-year contract. Everywhere Boogie Cousins has been, his personality has been an issue. Even in a winning environment at the University of Kentucky or in a losing environment in Sacramento. Now, you guys talk about winning. Well, the Pelicans could argue that they won actually at a higher percentage when Boogie was out compared to when he was there, because they did win that series totally without him in the playoffs.
And we've seen free agency this summer. There's not a lot of money to be had. So the teams are taking less risks because they don't have the money to just toss around and spend with guys.